Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Steve Jones Show on a Tuesday. Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve will soon be there from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, great selection of new and pre-owned inventory. And you have a sales staff that, whether you're looking for the new or the pre-owned vehicle, they're there for you and not just there for the sale. And then a service department that is there for you for whatever vehicle you choose, with the diagnostics, the inspections, all the routine maintenance. And, of course, that experience in the service department is always looking for... is always filled, I should say, with many awesome technicians ready to serve you. But SMC looking for more due to the busy business that a 107-year-old dealership has earned. They're looking for entry-level and experienced technicians to work in their quick lane, car light truck service, heavy truck service, body frame and alignment and towing departments. Whether you are an experienced technician, entry-level technician looking for your first job, or maybe you're looking for a career change, they'd love to hear from you. Stop by in person, apply online at sunburymotors.com, or call Todd at 286-7746. And of course, all of this, the Sunbury Motors guarantee, always there. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Another busy show coming up today. Neil Coulong on the 1-4 Steelers. Going to somehow make sense of the 38-3 thumping to the Bills. Always look forward to what he has to say, and I'm very curious about this particular week. So we'll get to that. Aeneas Hawkins, former Penn Stater. You hear him also on the post-game show on the Penn State Sports Network. He is back with us today as well. We have Michael Barkan, NBC Sports Philly, will join us on Thursday at 3:35 to get ready for Eagles-Cowboys and, of course, talk some Phillies. And at the moment right now, it is a very, very good start for the Phillies in this Game 1 NLDS. Top of the fifth right now, 6-1 Phils. Big day also for Nick Castellanos, who, of course, has had a rough go for the most part in his first season as a Philly. But he's got 3 RBIs today, 3 for 3 on the day. And the Phillies lead 6-1. Top of the fifth, one out. Ranger Suarez got the start. Went a three and a third of an inning. Allowed 3 hits, an earned run, which was a homer to Darnell. 5 walks, 5 strikeouts on 86 pitches. And now the bullpen will try to take it the rest of the way for the Phillies with a 6-1 lead at the moment. Gene Segura also has an RBI on the day, and Alec Bohm continuing his emergence both with his glove and with his bat. He's got 2 RBIs on the day. So that's all your scoring that we've seen so far. Castellanos had RBI single to right in the first to make it 1-0. Bohm then followed with an RBI single to shallow right. That gave the Phils a 2-0 lead. Then you had the Darnell homer in the second to make it 2-1. Bohm sacrifice fly in the third, followed by a Gene Segura single to center in the third. That made it 4-1, so you got 2 more runs there for the Phils, and then 2 runs in the fourth, courtesy of another RBI single from Nick Castellanos. So there you go. Two in the first, two in the third, two in the fourth, and now actually make it 7-1, Phils, as Sosa just had a sacrifice fly to center. So 7-1, Phils. How about that? They are definitely one of the more dangerous teams right now in baseball in the postseason. The way they were able to shock the Cardinals with the comeback they had Friday night. We talked about that yesterday. Then taking care of business Saturday night in the win. And so far, they have really jumped the gun on the Braves. 101 win team, of course. Braves finished off the season with the big winning streak to take the division away from the Mets, who, of course, now are out. But now they find themselves trailing 7-1 at home, top of the fifth, two outs to the Phillies. Phillies 7-10-0 right now across the board, so give them 10 hits on the day. One run for the Braves, four hits, one error. So we'll keep you posted on that one as we go about as well. And then also in baseball tonight, in a little while actually, in about 20 minutes or so from now, you got the Mariners-Astros game one, then Guardians-Yankees tonight at 7:37 on TBS, then Padres-Dodgers at 9:37. That's the lineup for tonight. Then the Phillies are right back in action tomorrow in game two at 4:35. Padres-Dodgers game two will be 8:37 tomorrow. Zach Wheeler will be back on the mound for the Phils for game two. But right now they lead 7-1, top of the fifth, two outs, and nobody on base at the moment. So that's a look at things as far as that goes right now. As far as getting ready for Penn State, Michigan, of course, James Franklin had his weekly press conference today. But here's this. Actually, I have to give credit to our boy Mark Wogenrich of SI.com. Since its last road win over a top five team, Penn State is 0-13 in such games. But the last time that they won obviously came in 1994. The 5-0 Lions won at Michigan, which was ranked number five, and they won after a bye week. How about that? But of course, in recent memory, Penn State is 2-5 off the bye week the last couple seasons. And James Franklin was asked about that today, which we'll see if we can get to that audio a little bit later on in the show.
Listen how nervous you are. You're a wreck.
Off we go.
You're a wreck. Last I checked, Phillies were up 6-1.
It's 7-1 now.
Let's get to the part our audience is actually interested in and not your junk. Do you realize that the Yankees-Guardians series is the only series where it's division against division?
Yeah. Everybody else is interdivision. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
Glad I showed up, huh? All right,
I think that makes it fun. I think it's great.
Yeah,
I like seeing all these interdivisional matchups in this round.
Most of them, they're routes. The Dodgers have just clobbered the Padres. The Astros have clobbered the Mariners. But these are best of fives. I don't like the Dodgers starting pitching. I don't like the Dodgers bullpen. I can't stand the Yankees bullpen. I mean, these are like the top teams. And the Yankee bullpen's a mess.
Yeah, and Mariners are a much different team, and I think them and the Phillies are the more dangerous teams, and the Guardians, of course. I think those are your three really dangerous teams right now.
But the Guardians can't hit.
Right, but they don't strike out, which is what the Yankees do, and I think that's going to make a big difference in this series.
I mean, they have a $69,000 payroll. What's the Yankee payroll? $2.78 billion?
Yeah.
It's pretty close, right?
Something like that. But hey, the Mets are number one, and they're out.
The payroll for the Yankees is what, about 260, 270?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Right. And the Cleveland, 69,000. Wow. But that aside, the Phillies are up 7-1. Remember, Atlanta, with the rest, was able to set up its rotation. Freed, so they can go 1-2-3. The Phillies had to start with their third starter today. Okay, third starter. The Padres are going to have to go with their fourth starter. See, that's the advantage of sitting out, is that you can set your rotation the way you want. And the Phillies, and Suarez was not good in the first two innings. He threw more balls than strikes and got away with it. I mean, and sometimes that has to happen. You have to have the ability sometimes to get away with it. And they did. And that's great. You know, Harper even put down a bunt. How about that? Mercy. All right. So we got what? Adam Rittenberg tomorrow. Michael Barkan, awesome on Thursday. John Bacon on Thursday, too. So we're going to move the round table, I assume, on Thursday?
We'll see if we can get that. We'll see if we can get that tomorrow. I'm still confirming that.
Scary. All right. So Rittenberg will be great. Barkan will be great. John Bacon's going to be great. John got a hold of me today. So I was like, yeah, my name's on the show. I can set that up myself. What the heck? I can do that one. You guys get all bent out of shape. What did you set that up for? Like, I don't know. Because I wanted to.
Hey, I'm okay with it. Less work for me.
I mean, great goodness. The commissioner addressed, you would expect, I mean, today's basketball media day. That's why he had a press conference today. Micah Shrewsbury, by the way, goes tomorrow. In fact, he'll be the last coach up tomorrow, as a matter of fact. He'll be the last coach up tomorrow. But the commissioner went today and gave a very interesting answer when asked about expansion. Remember, if we go back to July and football media days taking place in Chicago, how gung-ho did he sound about expansion in that press conference? What would you say on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'd say 9, 10.
Yeah, I mean, I would have gone with a minimum of 8. How about that, to be just cautious? Just
absolutely.
To be cautious, okay? So we'll go 7 to 8, right? Today, he gave exactly the answer I expected him to give based on maybe some stuff I know. How about that? Okay? He gave a very measured answer on that today. Very measured. That they need to take care of the 14 schools they have now. And how they integrate USC and UCLA while still being mindful of expansion. A far more measured answer. As I've said, many times on here, that to me the time frame is not like now. The time frame is between now and about August 1st. And the reason I say that is that by August 1st, we'll know one way or the other what kind of TV contract is available to the Pac-10 and whether everybody signs on to it. But I thought what he said was today very measured. And that's the answer I expected him to give. That essentially the Big Ten has to take care of the 14 schools they have now. They have to properly integrate USC and UCLA. And that is not a small proposition, as we know. Again, it is great. I think it's great they're in. Not just good, I think it's great. All right? That kind of expansion, that is a grand slam to me. Let's use baseball metaphors here, since it's the playoffs. And then he said, while being mindful of it. Okay. That's fine. You always have to stay aware of what the landscape is at the time. And your options are, okay, do I like what I have in stand pat? And then do the best I can with what I have. Do I say, you know what? A couple more might not hurt. I think it would really enhance what we're doing. And then you go there. Or, hey, let's go to 20. But remember, whatever number you get to, you have to be able to manage it. And that is, and that's the part that comes into play here. Because remember, if you any move you make now is going to have ramifications for decades. So you have to realize, okay, are the ramifications worth it for decades? Because once you do it, you do it. And that's what you have to keep in mind with this. Right? And if you think in the end it's the best thing to do, then go for it. But remember, you also have to manage it. And it's and look at the NFL, 32 teams, but all they do is football. Baseball's 30 teams, but all they do is baseball. When you're in a college conference, you have to manage men's soccer, women's soccer, baseball, softball, men's gymnastics, women's gymnastics, field hockey, you know, volleyball. I mean, you have to manage wrestling. You've got to manage all these sports besides football, men's and women's basketball. That's a lot that you have to manage to make work. So you have to make sure that all the parts do fit in besides just getting, boom, voila, we've expanded. UCLA and USC expansion, home runs, my opinion, love it. Now the question is, do you want to do more than that? Or do you want to settle in and manage what you do have? Because there will be challenges integrating USC and UCLA. Are you ready to take on even more challenges by bringing in more schools? Because it's going to bring with it another level of management. And the question will be, of course, the money part, which we talk about all the time. All right. I'm mindful we need a break. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Our job today as broadcast professionals in the building is to distract Matt just enough.
Yeah, I'm nervous about this series. Guardians are hot.
You're a wreck. You only have one offensive player and no bullpen.
Yeah, and starting pitching questionable too.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Q, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory, all with the Sunbury Motors guarantee and a fabulous service department that backs it all up. It's Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online, sunburymotors.com. All right, Phillies with a 7-3 lead. One out, bottom of the fifth, first and second with, again, one out for the Braves. Former Philly farmhand Travis d'Arnaud has driven in all three runs with a homer and a double. Remember, d'Arnaud played for the Williamsport Crosscutters at the same time his brother Chase played for the State College Spikes. Matt sends me all these notes. No. All right. I think they dealt Travis d'Arnaud. I want to say, was he in one of the Cliff Lee trades? Might have been. All right. But he's with the Braves now and backstopped their championship last year. 7-3, bottom of the fifth, Ranger Suarez is out. So we'll see how it plays out. So let's get more on the baseball playoffs. He's an analyst on the Astros Network with Harry's son, Todd Callis. He is a guy that
had a long major league career, hit a 14th inning home run in Game 3 of the 2005 World Series that helped the White Sox win the World Series over the Astros. That is Jeff Blum. Welcome to the show. Great to have you with us.
It is a pleasure to be on. I appreciate it.
It's Game 3, by the way. He did that in 2005. White Sox ring. All right, so here we are to the playoffs. You understand the mentality that has to take place. How different does the mindset need to be on not just every at-bat, but every hit and every play in the field?
You know, it's much like watching the fans in the stands during the regular season. They're going to sit down, they're going to eat some peanuts, do the wave, and kind of enjoy the atmosphere of being at a ball game. But the playoffs are a completely different animal from the stands to the field, because the fans are going to be standing up. Every pitch means something. And for a player during the regular season, it's about winning, it's about helping your team, but it's also about creating a career, getting a contract, getting paid, and trying to develop yourself as a ball player. But once you get to the postseason, all of a sudden all the numbers go out of the way and you're just thinking about finding a way to make each play. You're finding a way to make each pitch. You're finding a way to get that big hit in that big situation. So the focus narrows a little bit. And when you get to this position, you've got teams who know how to focus. That's how they got here. And now it's just a little more fine-tuned and honed in. But a lot of it's based on being able to execute.
Guy that executed well all season, winning 18 games, was Justin Verlander. How remarkable was his season as you viewed him all year?
We literally ran out of superlative to give to Justin Verlander. Because, you know, you start out in spring training and you understand that, you know, the owner Jim Crane took a flyer signing him after Tommy John and not pitching in 2 years. What is Justin Verlander going to look like? What is he going to be able to bring to the team? And here he is sitting on a 1.75 ERA. Mm-hmm. His whip is at 0.83, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And opponents are hitting under 200 against him. So he basically came back as a very good version of who he was before he went on that injured list with the Tommy John surgery. But at the age of 39, having Tommy John and being in line for a Cy Young Award-winning season is beyond comparison, because he'll be the only guy that's ever done it.
When you look at the teams in the playoffs, bullpens become exponentially more important at this time of the year, and managers make moves earlier at this time of the year. When you look at the bullpens, who's among the better bullpens in the playoffs? Which ones should a manager be worried about?
You're exactly right. You know, during the regular season, watching especially a team that I cover in the Astros, they allowed their pitchers to go into that sixth and seventh inning quite a bit, which right. helped the bullpen stay fresh. They pitched extremely well. So arguably right now, the Astros may have the best bullpen as far as depth and with the numbers, because they've got guys out there that have all done very good in high leverage situations. Dusty Baker and Josh Miller, the pitching coach, have done a good job of putting them in certain matchups where they're going to see the success. But, you know, the way that the Braves pitch, the way that the Dodgers pitch, I think those two teams, as far as pitching, are very good. The Dodgers may have a better bullpen, but the Astros in the American League, nobody is matched up with their pitching. And their ability to go out there and actually shorten a game in the postseason, like you're talking about, may actually prove to be to their advantage, because they can bring in four or five high-leverage guys that are accustomed to pitching late in games.
See, and that's what I see with the Yankees. The first half of the season, the Yankees had the depth in the bullpen you're talking about, but attrition has taken a toll on that staff. Is that how you look at it?
I do, and they had a couple of injuries too. You know, Clayton Holmes and I believe Michael King out there. You know, those were guys that were absolutely wipeout dominant through the first half of the season. Then you have a couple of injuries, a couple of hiccups. Aroldis Chapman isn't performing the way you want him to, and you're trying to start to fill voids, and that's where your bullpen takes a beating a little bit. And I still even think now, you know, with Aroldis Chapman not being on that roster and the question marks around some of those guys, it's going to make it tough for Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman to put together a bullpen that they feel can back up a rotation if they have the lead.
It would not be, obviously, fair to go past the Yankees without asking about Aaron Judge. I mean, to see somebody hit 62, drive in, 132 the way he did, and still hit, right in the 310 range. What did you think in watching this play out, especially in September?
Well, he's an absolute Adonis, and I'm not sure, you know, if you ever get a chance to go watch this guy play, go, because you hear about the mythical size of 6'7", 250, and, you know, being elite as far as being fast. He can play center field at that size. And then he can also get on the plate and hit you 300, which is remarkable. And he can drive the ball out of the ballpark at a moment's notice. Obviously, he is a game-changing type athlete, both defensively and on the offensive side. So it's, you know, as amazing as it's been to watch, I'm not sure if this is just the beginning of Aaron Judge because he's so good.
And you're right. See, and this is something I've tried to point out all season long. It's like, watch him play defense.
Yeah.
Because the hitting is one thing. Anybody can sit there and watch him hit. He's a really good all-around player. I have to ask you about the Dodgers, because the Dodgers have been, and they've had the Padres number, and not just having the Padres number. I'm talking when they beat the Padres, it's 9-1, it's 13-2. I mean, it's been amazing. When you look at how they're constructed, and money makes a difference, let's not pretend that. Mm-hmm. How do you look at the balance of the Dodgers across the board?
I'm actually kind of curious to see how they do in the playoffs, because they set a franchise record with 111 wins. They've got incredibly dominant starting pitching. Their bullpen's been lights out. But for me, it's kind of been the offense has been a little inconsistent. Mm-hmm. They rely so much on Mookie Betts. Trey Turner is an absolute animal in that lineup, getting on base, stealing bags. They go first to third great. But there is some deficiency there with a Max Muncy. Yes, they're going to maybe get a pitch that they can drive. But at the same time, they've kind of exposed the opportunity to maybe pitch to them a little bit better. So if you have good pitching that can kind of suppress some of those other guys and keep pushing them down, like the Bellingers in that lineup, and really force them to rely on a Max Muncy or somebody other than Mookie Betts or a Trey Turner and Turner at third base, then you kind of have an opportunity to pitch that lineup. But for the first time, the Dodgers, for me, actually seem like a lineup that you can actually pitch to and kind of maneuver if you have enough arms out there.
And then there's the Braves. I mean, the defending champions started out 23-27. That's what they were through 50 games. Now, how do you view the Braves?
Well, what's amazing to me is that the two World Series teams from last year and the winner of the Atlanta Braves, they actually got better.
Yes.
And it's not too often that you can say that about a team. You know, Dansby Swanson is having a career year. Albies may come back later if they move on in the championship series, if not World Series. But their rotation is magnificent. And then you add in a Spencer Strider, who is one of the better pitchers I've ever seen in mm-hmm. this league,
yep.
with his ability to pump 98 to 100 with a slider that not many people can catch up to, make them devastating. Granted, their bullpen may be a little shaky, and they have some spots to work out there. But when you're able to go out there and thump and put five runs on the board in a heartbeat, and, you know, they solidified their defense with Michael Harrison in center field. This guy has been dynamic both offensively and defensively, and the way you make a pitching staff better is play great defense, and that's what he's allowed them to do.
And Freeman, of course, is now with the Dodgers, so they pick up Olson, but they also have Acuna back because he missed all of the playoffs last year in the second half last year. What kind of difference makers can Olson and Acuna mean to what the Braves want to do?
Well, it's amazing to think that you can actually have a guy like Freddie Freeman walk and go on free agency to another team, and you almost make a lateral move in picking up a guy like Matt Olson. The at-bats are going to be a little bit different. You know, Freddie really works counts, can handle the strike zone, get the on-base percentage up. But at the same time, Matt Olson can go out there and drive you in three runs with one swing of the bat. So at the plate, you're not really losing too much. And I actually think that Matt Olson might be one of the better first baseman defenders, because I've watched him for years with the Oakland A's go out there and win gold gloves and pick up guys with his ability to scoop and his ability and his intuitiveness to go over there and adjust to hitters and where that ball is being placed. Matt Olson is a nice addition, but you're right about Acuna Jr. I mean, five tools, plays defense, has the arm, has the power, has the ability to get on base, and this guy just wreaks havoc when once he's on base. He can steal you a bag or score from first on a double.
Yeah, no question about that. I look at the managers, and I know, you know, other guys have won titles. I just feel the Astros have a big advantage with Dusty Baker. You've watched him on an everyday basis. What does his demeanor and his instinct for the game mean?
I think that's the biggest thing, because, you know, when he came in, he obviously got the keys to a Ferrari, so he knew the engine was there. It was just, how do you redirect this and put it in a positive light? How do you deflect everything that happened in that 2017 scandal. And Dusty has been more than admirable in that position of leadership, just in the sense he can get out in front of a story and he can change the narrative. The guy's got 45, 50 years in Major League Baseball between being a player, front office, and being a manager. There is nothing that phases this guy. So I think the fact that he's been such a calming influence and kind of that fatherly figure in front of these guys who are in the heat of turmoil has given them an opportunity to play better, because they don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. Dusty just says, look, people are going to say what they're going to say. You don't have to believe that. You just believe that you're a good ball player. We're going to go out there and play as hard as we possibly can, because I have the utmost belief in you. But he's been a tremendous leader and calming influence for sure.
Jeff, I want to ask you about the analytics part of it, because obviously every time we turn around, somebody's mentioning an exit velo, or it could be a home run in this park, but not this, whatever. The influence on the game as to how you see it, right? Because, I mean, you see it every single day. So how is it influencing how the game is played? And at the same time, what is your feeling about the use of analytics?
There are parts of it I think are great. They're great for me being on, and for you and I being on the media side, because now we have a little more information to tell a story that we're trying to explain. Because, I'm lucky enough to work with a partner who does a lot of research and does a lot of preparation. So when I see things on the field, you know, we didn't have names and numbers to put to things when I was playing.
Right,
Man, I crushed that ball, you know. and now it's like, oh, I got to run up and see what my exit velo is. You know, that's how the game's changed a little bit. And I hope that it hasn't infiltrated, you know, too much into the clubhouse, because players still play the game. Players are still married. They're still having off-the-field issues. You know, I've got to call the AC repairman. It's got me distracted. But the analytics will carry you so far, but it will not play the game for you. If the analytics meant as much as they believed it did, there would be computers in that dugout manipulating lineups and manipulating moves during the game. And I think that will never happen, because there is so much more involved. And that's why you need guys like Snicker and Aaron Boone, Dusty Baker, Kevin Cash, even down in Tampa Bay, as good as they are with the analytics, they still know that there has to be a human in that dugout that understands that the numbers may say this, but at this given moment, this player is going to be better at this opportunity than maybe another one. And that's why I think that the human element, and you know as well as I do, things go in cycles. And the cycle of the human element being married with the analytics is going to come back.
Yeah, and see, and I know in broadcasting baseball here, because they do the State College spikes. You mentioned Clay Holmes. Clay pitched here in State College. Right, and then doing Penn State football with Jack Ham and doing basketball with Dick Girardi on the network up here, we use it some, but not that often. To me, it's the action that still dictates what happens. I mean, that's how I look at it.
No, and think about why analytics were made. They were made for fantasy baseball players.
Right.
They were made for contract negotiations. That's all they were really built for. Ultimately, you can put all the numbers you want, like I said earlier, in the dugout, but if you don't have somebody actually understanding the situation and how to use those guys appropriately, it's going to be worthless.
Yeah, and that's, you know, again, and I want as much information as possible, but you have to have the ability in our profession, Jeff, like as you do, to use it at the moment where it's needed. So, all right.
Yeah.
Jeff, what a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Hope this isn't the last time we talk.
Yeah, me too. Hopefully we get deep into this thing. We talk a little bit more.
Sounds great, Jeff. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
World Series champion Jeff Blum got his ring with the Chicago White Sox, now works with Todd Kallas on the Astros Network. Let me ask this question, okay? Watch the Raiders and Chiefs last night. Josh McDaniels went for two, down 30-29. Now, he's got a terrific kicker in Daniel Carlson, so I'm sure the idea was, hey, go for two, get in front. Hey, by the way, if we don't, we still have this guy. All right, so I understand that part of it. Let me ask you something. Which games are being won by analytics?
None. Zilch.
Let me ask. And I'm only asking, if people have an answer, I'd love to hear it. Because I'm seeing a lot of games being lost with decisions based on analytics.
And every one of them was dumb. You had 4 minutes to go still in the game. You kick the extra point. You tie the game. You play defense.
I don't mind. Look, I don't mind going on fourth down, first, second, third quarter, maybe early in the fourth quarter. 2 points, you want to pick a spot, fine. My issue with the analytics in football is you have to understand time, score, and possessions remaining, and that has to enter into the decision that you make to go for it on fourth down. That has to enter into the decision you make to go for a two-point conversion. All right? And I feel like I'm looking at the card, and the card says, I don't care what the card says. I'm looking at the clock. I'm looking at my team. I'm looking at how the game is played out. And do I need to get the two-point conversion now because, look, I'm worried about Mahomes, or I'm worried about my defense, whatever it may be. Or I've got a great kicker, and guess what? I can tie the game up. I can win the thing and over. I can win the game at the end with my kicker, who's better than Kansas City's kicker, right? And yeah, you know, there are a lot of things that enter into it, and I'm seeing so many decisions that are based on analytics that aren't working, and teams and guys are losing games. Or almost. Brandon Staley, his own 46, 4th and 2. I got a 2-point lead. They need a field goal. He goes for it. I'm like, what are you doing? And of course they missed. Now you're giving Cleveland a short field. Okay, here's my deal. I punted to them. They started maybe the 10, 15-yard line with Jacoby Brissett. I feel better about my odds, don't you?
Yep. The only way last night's decision makes sense to me with the Raiders is if it's under 2 minutes.
Yeah, I got it.
But 4 minutes to go, stop.
Yeah, I mean,
kick the field goal
and
play defense. You can rely on your defense. They got stops for you at that point.
Yeah, kick the extra point.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And I've still got my kicker in the bank that if they kick a field goal, he can tie it, or I get to overtime, he can win it because Carlson is terrific.
Exactly.
Right? It's like, I mean, what do I have? So look at John Harbaugh. He's lost games because he's done the analytics thing. The other night, he did it conventionally. He kicked a field goal, made it 16-10. Oh, then he fell behind 17-16. Well, if he'd gone for it, all he needed was a field goal to win. He's got the best kicker maybe in the history of the game. And guess what? They got the field goal and won the game. And the reason they got the field goal to win the game is because he kicked the field goal earlier. Like, I'm sitting there like, and they showed the booth where the guys were sitting. No offense, I looked at the booth and I thought to myself, that's not exactly the group I would trust with my football decisions. That's just me. I'm like, I don't know. Did you see the shot?
I did not know, but that's funny. I would have said the same thing.
I mean, I looked at the booth, there's like 2-3 guys in there. And one of them definitely looked like he was in, MIT, RPI, whatever, right? I'm like going, I don't know. I would trust him. I would trust him with rocket fuel. I don't know if I trust him with football.
I don't know if I'd even trust him with rocket fuel, to be honest with you.
Well, no. I mean, look, you're from MIT. I trust you with a lot of things. I'm just not so sure I trust you with football. But that's just me. All right. A lot of things I trust you with, though. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.